What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the episode 2 of the Action Podcast with me, Martin Alvarez, and co-host Coach Ivan Salazar. Welcome everybody back. We've got had some really good feedback this week on things that we could improve. One, starting with my microphone, obviously, and then some other things that people wanted us to hear or talk about. But we've got a lot of positive feedback on what's on our podcast, and something that we want to keep on going. So we're on episode 2.
Yeah, welcome to the action. We are on episode 2. We got the feedback. This is going to be a growing endeavor for us. So we appreciate the support, and the feedback we've been getting from our fellow coaches and obviously our friends and family. So we're pushing through. Let's get it.
All right. Episode 2 starts now. All right, so it's been a big week for coaches all over the state of Texas. If you don't know, then you should be worried, because everybody knows that February 1st date every 2 years is realignment, an exciting time for coaches, seeing where you're going to fit. If you're going to a new district, if you're adding people to your district, or maybe your district's growing or getting smaller, it can be an interesting time for coaches, and scheduling is a big deal. I remember back in the day when you'd attend the realignment meeting to even find out what classification you were going to be put in. They wouldn't release those numbers till the day of. Now they release them a couple weeks before or a month before or something. So there's a bit of an idea of how it's going to line up. But any surprises or anything that you saw, Coach, with realignment?
Well, it's definitely exciting times. A lot of anxiousness, for sure, Everybody, is waiting for that domino to fall, that first domino, and then, voila, now you're left to deal with the aftermath and such. So we are in District 15 for Region 4, and so we definitely inherited, somebody like Stockdale and San Antonio Young Men's Leadership Academy. So,
and Cotulla.
And Cotulla, yeah. So we, for the most part, we have some familiar foes that were intact from the previous alignment, and then we brought 3 on. All excellent football teams. We're excited of the possibilities and just the competitiveness that we're gonna be working with. So aside from that, I was definitely looking at some of my San Antonio folks. I was really intrigued by 5A Division I and the previous district I worked in. South Sand High School was in there with Eagle Pass and a few of the Laredo schools, but now they're bringing in John Jay, and interesting how Northside has, kind of deviated from, the normalcy of what they were once, all in one pot. Now they're sending a couple of schools to the Northeast District, and then John Jay dropping down to 5A, and they're joining in the likes of South Sand, Southwest schools, a couple of those Laredo schools, and Martin, Nixon, and Sigaroa, and then Eagle Pass win. So I'm excited to see the competition in that district. Definitely excited for, the District 13 Region 4, man, got a lot of powerhouses in there, with Bernie Champion, Piper, Smithson Valley, New Braunfels, MacArthur, Wagner, Seguin, Victoria East. Those are all excellent schools that, are on the come up, if not already there. Smithson Valley, had a wonderful year last year. So that district is extremely competitive. So those are a couple of the districts that really, popped out, obviously, aside from what we're encountering with our district. So.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things with our district is that it went from 6 teams to 8 teams, which is something that's kind of unusual for small schools, I guess, or at least I just haven't experienced it in my being in small schools. The biggest thing for us now is we're going to have 2 games preseason, and then boom, we're right in the district. So every game is a big game starting from week 2 on. I mean, essentially, how does that change your preparation? How does that change how you approach it? Before you get 4 games, 5 games to kind of see what you got and what's going, but now it happens so fast. How does that change? You've been in that situation where you're in larger districts. How does that change, and what's the difference in preparation, I guess?
Well, I guess the number one thing that I want to point out is we get that extra week, right? We don't do spring football. you know, so we get an opportunity to bring the kids in a little sooner and definitely hit the, you know, the rhythm pattern that we want to establish a lot earlier, which is important, right? Because once we get into, you know, you said two district, it's three pre-district games. And so we have seven district games and in the football realm. And so they all become extremely important, right? You don't start off on the right foot or you don't gain your footing immediately, then it's going to be a problem of, you know, trying to get traction, you know, down the stretch and such. So I do like the fact that we get to bring them a little earlier and build a lot on that rhythm so we can make sure we get traction and hit the ground running.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to like you said, my fault, seven district games and two, three preseason games to get them rolling and get them ready, district ready. Definitely going to be an interesting season next year, having that large of a district, something that we're not really accustomed to. Anything else that you saw on realignment days? I noticed it seemed to me, looking through it, that there were a lot of larger districts this year. For some reason, not just on the small school, but you know, the big schools are kind of used to that. But on the smaller schools, a lot of big team districts. Anything else that popped out at you in realignment?
No, I just, you know, that exactly you pointed out. I definitely I can see the competition increase. You know, each game becomes, you know, crucial and pivotal as you move through your district and such. And so definitely the preparation. It's heightened tensions, right? In the office, they all mean a lot more. You know, sometimes, you know, when you're in a smaller district, you know, you can kind of, you know, you're fortunate. You know, sometimes people post a losing record and end up in the playoffs, kind of like the situation right that we were in last year and such. So, yeah, you know, each one of those become extremely important and they're very pivotal in your approach and such. So I would say that there's going to be a lot of heightened tensions in preparation for all your opponents when you have a larger district.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Also, the same weekend as realignment is the regional meetings for Texas High School Coaches Association. I wasn't able to attend this year, but you said you went ahead and made it over to the Region 8 meeting. Anything important that you picked up while you were there?
So Region 8 is something that I'm used to going to. Being a San Antonio guy, you know, a lot of my coaching brethren is always encouraged to make that and such. So I do want to give a shout out to the Sotomayor staff, Coach Morales and his staff. They did a wonderful job hosting at UTSA's race facility.
The race facility, yeah.
It's beautiful, man. The UTSA's got a lot of wonderful things going on over there. So, yeah, they did a good job hosting. And so one of the more notable things that I really enjoyed, I'm a father of three girls, man. So this means a tremendous amount to me, right? Is the statistic of we've reached about 18% of female coaches within the state of Texas. And that's important to me.
My daughter's a coach. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's important to me, right? So we're trending in the right direction. We're fortunate. We have a wonderful representation of our fantastic girl staff that they're at Natalia High School, you know, almost about 50%, really.
Right.
But that's something that everybody is afforded, you know. So that leadership from the women's perspective is crucial to our young women, our young student athletes. And so I'm excited for that. Being a girl dad, you know, I see that it's growing. We're breaking barriers. And ladies, you know, if you can hear me, definitely continue to invest in yourself and try to become a coach if that's what you're passionate about, because these young women that are growing up, you know, right now, obviously student athletes, but as you move forward, you know, growing up, it's important for them to have those strong women representation in those coaching positions.
Yeah, just like, you know, just like we talked last week, you know, the father figure roles that a lot of us coaches play. And it's the same thing for the girl side, you know, and the more that they have women that they can look up to and be a part of their lives, I think the better. And it does seem to be growing every year at coaching school, and Texas High School Coach Association is where there's a big women representation. And some of the greatest coaches I've known have been women. And it's beneficial to everybody if we can bring them in the fold, you know.
Absolutely, Coach. And then to bring back to the forefront, you know, mentorship programs like the ROC mentorship program that's you know, brought on by Texas High School Coaches Association. That's important, you know, to continue to establish a pipeline of coaches. You know, we're talking about women right now, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of professionals leaving the industry, you know, and for a variety of reasons. And so that our organization is being proactive of maintaining a pipeline or establishing a bigger pipeline and such. So definitely important to do so because, you know, I said it last week, right? We're in an industry that's, you know, part of like the biggest missionary work of our time, you know, and that's not a quote from me. That's just an acknowledgement of what a lot of athletic directors feel and such. So definitely important for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a great thing that our association has been pushing for more roles for women and things like that. And then also just including them in the development of our profession, you know, and it's a good thing to see. It's a good thing to see. And it's a good thing that they do for women coaches. Anything else that you picked up while you were at the region meeting that it's good to note on the podcast?
Coach, just encouraging all the coaches to attend as many of these events as possible, right? The coaching clinics are established, you know, the regional meetings, being able to network, pick ideas. Like, that's really, like, in a nutshell, what I really enjoy most about these meetings and those opportunities and getting a chance to meet new coaches. I got a chance to, you know, speak to a lot of Sotomayor staff members and you know, hopefully we have one jump on a podcast with us. I know that he's got an interesting background in finance. And, oh, wow. And yeah. You know, he talked a lot about managing money the right way and how he learned it. And it's just an interesting deal. But like, there's so many wonderful coaches out there that you don't get a chance to meet until you attend these events. And I think, you know, if you're looking for growth, you know, these conversations outside of those meetings, you know, they're fantastic. You know, and I know that, you know, every time we go, you know, I get the side eyes from the wifey, right? Like, oh, you're going to this again. Like, you know, yes, you know, the X's and O's are fantastic to learn, right? Getting the chance to learn from wonderful coaches that come and speak at these clinics. But the conversations that you have outside of those meetings, you know, whether it's working on X's and O's, working on philosophy or strategy, like, you know, there's countless conversations that could be had that you're not having if you don't attend.
Oh, no, absolutely. I think that it's one of the biggest things in the coaching fraternity, you know, or I guess you could put it, or in the profession is those regional meetings, Texas High School Coach Association Clinic, and even all the other clinics that go on, just a lot of way to network and build leadership. A lot of guys that I've met at those clinics and coaches I consider great friends, and it's always good to catch up with people that you know already. And you know, which kind of leads us into the next thing, Coach. You know, we were going to talk about this week about some of the top five things that maybe rookie coaches aren't told or taught, you know. And so, you know, going right into the next segment, top five things that rookie coaches need to know when they step in the door.
So as we break into the industry, right, like we become coaches, like I want to tell you that a lot of times there's not really a manual out there that you're made aware of the success steps that you need to take, right? So so Alvi and I are going to put together a list for you, new coaches or people that are wanting to become a coach and join this profession. I've had conversations with people that you know, how do I become a coach? Well, first of all, right, let's establish this. You need to become a teacher first.
Yeah.
Get right. That degree. So yeah. Getting those credentials, you know, going to school, you know, getting that degree. And we can break this down a little further. There's a lot of, you know, tidbits that involve about getting that degree and what you're going to teach and such, but you definitely need a degree. Right. So that's number one. Right. What content you're going to teach. That's number two. So we can dive on that later. Right. But what if you're already a coach? Right. So we have a list, top five lists that each one of us are going to introduce to you that are helpful tidbits that you can use for nuggets of knowledge and to help you in your ways that you're creating your own path. You know what I'm saying, Alvi?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So without further ado, go ahead.
Number five. My number five, I have take care of the classroom. You know, I think that's sometimes, you know, whenever coaches are, you know, are seen, big stigma, not as much in the last couple of years, but I remember when I first started 16 years ago, the big stigma was that coaches didn't teach, you know, they couldn't teach, but which is a complete misconception, because if you're a good teacher, then you're a good coach, because coaching is teaching, you know. But the misconception that you didn't take care of the classroom because you were more worried about the field. And So when I came in, I mean, nobody really told me, but I knew that I had to take care of that aspect of it. A lot of times, if you're not taking care of the classroom, then you put your athletic director and your head coaches in bad spots because they do value you as a coach. But if you're not taking care of the classroom, then it's sometimes hard to do that. So as a new coach, come in and take care of your classroom. Ask the older teachers, work with your other teachers in the building. If someone else is teaching the same subject, get with them. Be part of those meetings as much as you can, because those relationships are just as important as what you're building on as far as coaching. So that would be my number five, is for young coaches, is take care of the classroom.
That's a great number five. Let's not forget that that's probably 80 to 85% of your salary, you know, your teaching endeavors. Yeah. So if that doesn't put it into perspective that what Alvi's number five is, and that, you know, I don't know what will, but that is, that is a fact.
It is.
My number five is definitely find you a mentor, right? So one of my mentors, two of my mentors that helped me, you know, with the coaching endeavor is Frank Akers, you know, and from a football perspective, he taught me the box, you know. And so if you're an offensive guy, then you'll know exactly how important and vital that is to your success. So and then Albert Torres is my other one, the head coach at Hardindale High School. You know, for the most part, taught me the professionalism, the organizational skills, taught me spread offense, up tempo and such. So these are two of my essential mentors. I'm gonna be honest, I should talk to them a lot more often. So when you find yourself your mentors, make sure you have those weekly, if not monthly, checkups with them, because it's crucial that these, when I say mentors, these are the people that are going to tell you the truth, even when you don't want to hear them. So, finding yourself a mentor.
Yeah. And that's actually a great point, because I know when I started and I came in, you know, and that leads me to my number four is be a sponge. You know, there wasn't anybody that I really latched onto as a young coach, because I thought I knew, you know, I thought I knew. And it wasn't until I got knocked down a few pegs a few times, or, you know, finally learned that if you're not taking in things from everybody and absorbing, and then you're going to get left behind. And you're not always right. As a young coach, sometimes we come in and we're very headstrong in our beliefs. And you got to fit your philosophy and your procedures and things to what your athletic director wants to do. And sometimes as a young coach, you try to buck the system because you think you know more. Having mentors or someone to latch onto that can show you and guide you is something that's extremely important, you know. So, you know, my number four is to be a sponge. Be open to ideas. Be open to different things. You might be a spread guy that ends up getting a job with a wing T staff. Absorb it, learn it, love it. And then whenever you get your shot, then you can probably meld a lot of those things. You know, as I became an offensive coordinator, there was little things that I took from every athletic director, every offensive coordinator, every offensive line coach that I had worked with, and kind of melded it into my own thing. But as you're young and you're coming up, absorb it, preach it, and take it as your own until you get to do your own thing. And that's my number four is be a sponge.
I love it. I love it. Got to be a sponge. Definitely essential to everybody's growth. My number four is find an understanding dance partner in life, right? They need to get what you do, you know? And when I say dance partner, right?
That should be number one, coach.
That should be number one. Yeah. I don't know what I'm talking. I'm probably going to get in trouble with that, but
you're going to get in trouble for that one.
I'm lucky for sure to have an understanding dance partner. You know, a lot of times you're going to take the lead. A lot of times she's going to take the lead, you know, vice versa. And so it's very important for somebody to get what you're doing, because you are going to spend a lot of time, you know, in this profession, you know, molding and growing young men and women in this profession. So, you know, so for somebody to be selfless and to share you with the community that you're helping build is definitely important, right? It also helps tremendously with the balance in your life, you know, and sometimes, you know, balance kind of can be a word or an experience that doesn't feel quite like it should be. But when you have somebody in your corner that's, you know, obviously motivating you and supporting you, it's going to be a huge benefit to your endeavors.
Absolutely. And I think I speak for myself, but there's no way that I could have been doing this for 16 years without having an understanding and loving dance partner, as you said. You know, you just like we talked about last week, where you have to balance those four F's, right? Faith, family, fitness, and finance. And a lot of that goes hand in hand with the person you choose to be in your life. And it's interesting you say that, because I did have a young coach a couple months back who was dating a girl and was really considering making her his fiance. Mm-hmm. And he said the test run was going to be the football season and see how it went football season wise. And it worked out for him, thankfully. And she was very supportive and as many games as she could attend. But definitely, I mean, for many of us coaches, our spouses are our rocks. You know, they're the ones that keep us in check and our egos down, and sometimes give us the reality of what's really going on, when sometimes we're thinking other things are happening, that kind of thing. And I love my wife, and I'm very glad to have her. And that should be number one, Coach. I mean, let's be honest.
And Coach, yes, you're right, man. I feel like I made a grave mistake.
You did. So hopefully, I don't know if she'll be listening to the podcast, but for me, that's my number one, Coach. Let me put it that way. All right. Well, that puts us. I guess we're on number three now, or what are we on number three?
Yes, sir.
I think my next, my number three would be do the things that nobody else wants to do. A lot of our job security comes from being able to be that person, that go-to person for something. You know, it might be something as menial as doing the laundry when nobody asks you to do, or, you're the one that sets up the field on a Friday, you know, with you know, taking your PE kids out there and setting up the field and, you know, without being asked, you know, you know, for me, I've always found that technology, and then social media now, you know, branding and things like that, has been a great way for especially young coaches, because sometimes us older guys are not as good at technology and, social media and things like that as some of these young guys. And if you're able to do those things, graphics, you know, all the kids love the edits and the little videos and TikTok and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a big way to push your brand of your school. And if you can help an older coach or an older athletic director and do those things that nobody else wants to do, you'll have job security, you know, for a long time, you know, because those are things that are undervalued sometimes, that aren't a big thing for some of the older guys when they're worried about it, all 1,000 other stuff, if you can take care of those small things. So definitely do the things that nobody else wants to do. Make yourself valuable, right?
Absolutely. And I think we're a little simpatico here, man, because that's sort of, you know, picking back off of yours and my number three, you know, don't put a time limit on your day, you know? And what I mean by that, right, obviously right. You don't want to spend the entire day there. Like that's very unreasonable, but you know, sometimes you need to do the extra, some of the things that you were mentioning here, and building relationships beyond the scope of responsibility is necessary for cohesion,
right.
for commitment, you know, things of that nature. So I really feel like if you're putting a time limit on your day, you're just watching the clock, man, trying to get out of there. And it's really not how it should be, man. By the way, when we do these things, you're probably going to have a passion for building communities. And anytime you're passionate about something, like, you're not watching the clock.
It doesn't feel like a job.
Exactly right. So, I feel like those, our number threes kind of fit, you know, hand in hand and such. So, I really do love where we're at right now.
Yeah, no, and actually that's my number two, right? Is, be the first one to get there and the last one to leave. If you're the first one to get there, you're never going to be late. That's one thing, which I know a lot of coaches, you know, that's something that Coach Martinez, our athletic director right now, very frowns upon, to do not be late, right? 15 minutes, you know, what's the rule? 15 minutes early, you're on time. On time is late, or whatever the old saying is, and it holds true. But be there first and be the last one to leave, you know, because that's where you build, you can build a lot of trust and just knowing that you're going to be there more than you're expected, because you care, right? And sometimes in a lot of staffs that I've been with, I'm fortunate to have worked with a lot of coaches that care, but some staffs have some trouble with that, where, you know, like you said, you're looking at the clock, you're trying to leave, you know, So as a young coach, make yourself available, you know, be the first one there, be the last one to leave, because there's always something to be done in a field house and in an athletic department.
Here, here. My number two is be selective on where you want to work. You know, understand the dynamics you're walking into. And so if you're doing it the right way, you've done your research, you know the coaches that you're working with, and you know the environment that you're walking into. If you're doing your due diligence and preparation, which you should, you should never take a job not understanding the full dynamics that you may be walking into. I think that it's an important aspect, you know, for mental health, you know, because a lot of times if you're in a situation that you do not want to be in because you already know there's some red flags in that situation, then don't make the decision to go there, you know. I preface it by saying, like, I realize that a lot of times you're eager to take the first opportunity you take or that's presented to you. But if you do your homework, you'll find that if you find a place that has hints of what is synonymous to what your personality traits are, and a lot of, you know, the things that you believe in as far as values are concerned, I think that's going to be important. You know, let me give you an example. If you are walking into a staff where the majority of them, you know, are single or been divorced, you know, a lot of times, you know, if you're a married person, those kind of values kind of contradict one another, right? You're at different points in your life. So I think that's a very, very important observation that you need to have about that situation. Me personally, if I've done my homework, you know, I know that there are certain coaches that, you know, rule with an iron fist and are authoritative, if you will. And, you know, it's my way or the highway, really in your face type of style. Like, you know, that's probably not going to be something that is going to be synonymous to what I feel. I'm a firm believer in, you know, empowering, making sure that, you know, not so much that the coaches are comfortable, you know, but like empowerment and servant leader, you know, driven, making sure that you're established, you're helping them establish their roots as young coaches and such. And so authoritative leadership style doesn't necessarily lend itself to that. You know, it's more like you're doing exactly what you're told and you don't have any, I guess you're given parameters, if you will. Right. So you don't have any critical thinking opportunities. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of an important thing to look at, you know, when you're walking into a situation and being presented a job.
Yeah. Is it a good fit? You know, because even on the other hand, if you're a guy that likes a lot of structure and is super, like, everything needs to be outlined, and you might have a head coach or an athletic director that is not quite as structured, or, you know, lets you do your thing. And, you know, it could be quite the opposite in the same way, you know, like you were saying. Well, and that leads to my number one, right? My number one is ask for help, right? I don't think that there is anything wrong with asking for help. If you're a young coach and you're lost, or you're looking for drills, or, you know, I mean, especially now in this age, you know, I remember when I was a first year coach, I hit up Barnes and Nobles and probably bought every football book that I could find as far as drills and things that were concerned. Did I end up using a lot of it? No, most of it was what I got from other people, but at least I felt I was being proactive, right? Nowadays, you have tons of information. I mean, you know, you can go on YouTube and find all kinds of drills. I still go on all the time and find stuff to do offensive line-wise, even to this day. But there is no coach that if you ask for help is not going to help you. If you just want to sit around and talk X's and O's, there is probably no coach in any field house is not going to take the time at some point to be like, yeah, let's talk about this, or, you know, start picking their brain. I mean, you know, there's no reason to ask for help, and that could be any type of help, right? I mean, yeah, coach, I don't know what to do, or I'm lost at this, or, you know, a lot of times coaches, and especially young coaches, I think are afraid to ask for help because of, you know, they don't want to get tagged with that stigma that they don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. But we all ask for help. Right. I mean, I still from time to time will call another coach and ask them for their opinion on something, or ask them what they do for a particular drill, or, you know, we're having trouble with our, you know, our guards, you know, staying square on their skip pull. What do you do to fix that? You know, so don't be afraid as a new coach to ask for help. That's my number one, because, you know, they can go down that hole real quick, you know. So be proactive. If you're having trouble, ask, right? I think that any head coach of their sport, whatever it is that you're coaching, if you ask, we'll help, you know. I mean, there's nobody that I know that would say I'm not helping the young guy, you know. So we want to build coaches. We want to build people in our profession. And I think if we want to keep these young kids around to follow up, you know, it's teaching them, you know, there's, you know, teaching them all that we can and try to unload our knowledge on them, because soon enough we'll be out of the profession and they're the ones that we're going to leave it to. And, and I think it's super important that we get these young guys prepared, you know, for coaching in this times, you know. And plus, you know, I remember as a young coach, you know, an older coach, actually taking my ideas, you know, he had never heard of what an RPO was, you know, and all of a sudden I'm trying to explain to him what an RPO was as an eighth grade offensive play caller, you know. And then the next thing I know is on Fridays we're running RPOs, and I was like, oh dang, I must be doing something right, you know. So you can always learn, right? Especially from these young guys, technology, social media, you know, the graphics game now that's huge with schools, all these things that you can bring value to as a young coach, is important. And we want to build as many of these young men and women, as possible into our profession. So definitely ask for help. That's my number one.
I'm in year 17 and I know I've asked Coach Alvey for help, you know, just assimilating to Natalia ISD, right? Like me being a person from the inner city, never have been in a small town environment. I've asked for help just to assimilate to the culture of what we got going on in Natalia High School. And, you know, and obviously, walking into a situation where, you know, the offense, I may have an idea of what's being run, but, you know, trying to, you know, streamline the signaling, the understanding of what we're trying to accomplish, and you know, bouncing ideas back and forth. Definitely, I've asked for help in year 17. So that, you know, if I've asked for help in year 17, for sure, in the first few years, that's something that you definitely want to get comfortable with.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
My number one is bring the juice.
The juice.
I'm definitely a person that wears my emotions on my sleeve. So I thrive in relationships and I thrive in energy. I hope I've conveyed that to you, Coach Alvey. Like, yeah, you know, that's something that I try to bring positive vibes. You know, the one thing is that I never want my kids to question my judgment and my commitment into what we're doing. You know, so I'm very invested, you know, obviously visually, you know, not my nonverbal cues, you know, my excitement for even something as little as breaking it out. You know, I definitely want to convey that we're excited to be where we're at. That's just my style. I realize a lot of times some people are a little bit more stoic, you know, or a little bit more introverted and such, but just keep in mind, right? When things are tough in a game and the kids are looking at you as a leader, you know, what are you conveying to them? You know, and I think that's kind of something that definitely I take a pride in and bringing the juice. The other thing is going on with bringing the juice is just inspiring confidence. You know, confidence transcends talent. You know, as a coach, as a player, whatever it is, right? Whatever you're doing and whatever endeavor in your life, like confidence is really something that can transcend talent and skill. You know, so, you know, bringing the juice, obviously, you kind of inspire, or you're a little bit of an extrinsic motivator, you know, for your student athletes to inspire confidence in what the situation is, what our objectives are, whether it's a Friday night game, whether it's Tuesday night game, whatever scenario you're in, we want to make sure that our kids are inspired with confidence and they're always bringing the juice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a great number one, because it doesn't take any knowledge of sport or coaching knowledge or coaching to have some energy, and to bring the juice. I mean, to have, you know, if you can get kids hype, you know, and excited about things, then that's half the battle, really. I mean, you know, and it's like I've always said, is you can't fool kids. If you care, it's going to show. And the kids don't care what you know until they know you care, right? Is that the old cliche? And I think that's a perfect number one, is definitely bring energy and enthusiasm to what you're doing, even if it's in the classroom, really, if you think about it. And that's why, you know, I think coaches and teaching go hand in hand. You can't be a good teacher if you're not a good coach. You can't be a good coach if you're not a good teacher, because you're motivating people to do things beyond what they know or think that they can do, you know. And I think that's one of the great things about our profession, is that we're able to do those things, but everybody's got to start somewhere. And so hopefully with these top five that we gave you guys for some of your first year coaches, young coaches, you know, maybe hopefully avoid some pitfalls and get you to grow in this profession. So I think that's a great list, Coach. Your top five were excellent. Well, I agree with all of them.
Stay tuned for next week's episode and see if I return, because Leah may not like my number one.
Yeah, you should have put that at number one, man. That's all on you. That's all on you, brother.
Yeah, man.
All right, so we would be remissed if we did not speak some football talk. The biggest thing right now, of course, is that apparently there's some championship game or something next week. I don't know. I stopped paying attention after the Cowboys lost. Apparently the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers are playing each other in the Super Bowl on Sunday. Must watch TV or not, Coach?
Absolutely, Coach. I mean, the ratings have never been higher. You know, I would say that there is obviously a legend in the making right now with Patrick Mahomes. He's must watch TV. You know, the Taylor Swift phenomenon. Did you see how much? I think it was like the tune of $350 million that she's generated, you know, for the NFL and advertising, right?
Well, that's the equivalent. Yeah, that's the conspiracy theory, is right, that it's all set up, and that it's just so when she can walk out there in the Super Bowl holding her Pepsi can or whatever it is, you know.
Well, I'm a little bit of, I want to say I'm a Swiftie, but I'm a fan. You know, my girls listen to her music already, and they know some of the songs already, you know, and so that's intriguing. You know, but I want to say I'm most intrigued by the Kansas City defense, you know, because offensively we know the 49ers have, you know, weapons, you know, they're excellent up front. But I'm really excited to see what Kansas City's defense can do and how they perform against the 49ers.
The 49ers have not looked spectacular the last two games, right? Against Green Bay. Against Green Bay, they should have probably lost that one. And they definitely should have lost against Detroit. And I think that you cannot bet against Patrick Mahomes in a championship game. I mean, he's 28 years old. He's 14-3 in the playoffs. And this is going to be his third Super Bowl appearance, right? I mean, besides the Swifties and all the people watching because of that, I mean, I think they just, for them to be doing what they're doing offensively, right, in the playoffs, without having really a number one wide receiver, I mean, the closest thing is Rice. Of course, you have Kelsey and the emergence of Isaiah Pacheco. You know, right now, do you take Pacheco or McCaffrey if you're going into this game? I mean, I don't know. You know, it's gonna, but defense is going to be the key, like you said, and I think that's why I'm leaning towards the Chiefs, because I really feel that the 49ers should be better defensively, right? I mean, you have Chase Young and Nick Bosa on the edge, right? You have Fred Warner in the middle. And still, these teams are able to run the ball on them. I mean, that was the key for Green Bay and also Detroit last week. If they don't drop a few passes, that game's over. If Campbell decides to kick a field goal once or twice instead of going for it on fourth down, that game is over. And the way that the Chiefs held, which to me was one of the most impressive offenses throughout the year, Baltimore and Jackson. I mean, they held them, like they made them look extremely mediocre. And I really think that the Chiefs will pull it off. Hopefully, you know, the thing that I wish for in a Super Bowl when the Cowboys aren't there is that at least it's a good game. And maybe I hit my numbers, right? I mean, that's kind of the the go-to right now. And the barbecue is good, you know. But it should be an interesting game, definitely. But I still don't bet against Mahomes. I think Mahomes pulls it out. I say 32-28 Mahomes. And really? With a defensive stop to win it. How about that?
You got it that high in the score. Well, first off, let's talk about Brock Purdy. I mean, you've mentioned, you know, and I even said they had no business winning the last two games. But who comes and bails them out? Brock Purdy. Yeah, you know, the last drive that he had against the Green Bay Packers was phenomenal. The scrambling ability and the playmaking ability that he presented, you know, and put on display against the Lions down the stretch was phenomenal. You know, I'm not sure where some of this hate is coming towards him. I would imagine he would be a fantastic story being mystery relevant, but that's not the case. And a lot of people need, like Cam Newton are taking shots at him.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very unnecessary shots, you know.
Well, everybody likes an underdog. I mean, everybody liked the Kurt Warner story. I mean, to the point that they made a movie about it. And here's Brock Purdy, the mystery relevant, the last pick in the draft. They just kind of threw, you know, apparently the quarterback's coach on the staff was calling a game that he saw him playing and was like, you know, that kid's pretty good. Like, he's not bad. I saw him play one time.
Brian Greasy.
Yeah, you know, so that's what you're going with, is you saw him play one time. And he turns out to be this. I mean, I don't think it's a fluke at this point, you know. Last year you could have said it was a fluke, but the way he's played this season and in the playoffs, I mean, he's the real deal. I think the intangibles,
you know, right. pop on the screen, the way that he leads the guys and they follow, you know, he's got a lot of personalities in that locker room, you know, and I really feel like he's done a great job of orchestrating, you know, the weapons. What is he going to apologize for having the weapons that he has? Like, every Super Bowl contender has dudes, you know. And speaking of dudes, man, like Christian McCaffrey has been a model of consistency. Really love watching him play, you know, against stout run defenses. You know, obviously they have guys that can, you know, they can hit outside with, you know, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, you know, George Kittle, Kyle Juszczyk. And he made a great couple of catches last game, you know, right on the sideline, you know, tippy toes, fullback.
It's a real fullback. Yeah, real fullback. And you don't see anymore, yeah.
Somebody that we and Natalia really enjoy, right? Those H-back types, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, with all that said, like you talked about defensively, they do have star power on the defensive end. I just don't think they're getting it done. Not to the tune of what Kansas City is going to present. You know, we know about Patrick Mahomes. We know about Isaiah Pacheco. You know, Rashee Rice is coming on. You know, Travis Kelce, you know, he's a dude. He went 11 for 11. 11 targets, 11 catches last week. By the way, he's now the new leader in touchdown receptions. Or I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And receptions. And then he's in a position for touchdown receptions. And so that's pretty neat. But I'm going to tell you some names that is going to win them the game. I'm looking at Chris Jones. Unblockable, man. You need two men.
Beast.
Two men to block that guy, right? Now, the reason why it's effective, you know, what they do, because he occupies those, you know, at least two guys, right? So Nick Bolton and Drew Tranquil have free running lanes, man. And they're excellent linebackers, you know. Le'Jarius Sneed, shutdown corner, man. Physical. Kind of a modified Richard Sherman, you know, probably has a little bit of man coverage skills that are a little bit better than Richard Sherman, because I know Richard Sherman was a little bit more cover three zone type of guy, man. But Le'Jarius Sneed is a dude, man. And then they have somebody like Justin Reed, you know, to quarterback the back end at the safety position. I think these names right here are why, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs will prevail to the tune of 24-13 Kansas City.
So defensive struggle then is what you see, right? I think.
Well, I mean, defensive struggle. I think there's gonna be enough plays made.
Yeah.
You know, there's gonna be plays to be had, but just look. I mean, Kansas City held the Ravens at home, by the way, to 10 points.
Made them the
most dynamic playmaker in the league. And then one, probably second. What is it? 1A, 1B. You know, Josh Allen. You know, they were able to hold him in check, but, you know, kind of hold him enough. I think he had 16 passes that were behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
So he did. Yeah. They prevented the deep ball. You know, Diggs was frustrated all game. And then you know, just totally undressing the Dolphins in the first round. You know, yeah, granted, the temperature was what it was, but, you know, there was no glimpse of the 70-point Dolphins that we saw earlier in the year.
No, like, Tyreek Hill, no Waddle, no –
completely shut them down.
I mean, A'shaun,
Raheem Morris, not Raheem Mostert. I'm sorry,
Mostert.
Mostert led the league in touchdowns. You know, he didn't do a damn thing that game. So I just really love Kansas City's defense, and I really feel that they'll prevail 24-13. Really frustrate Brock Purdy without having to bring a lot of pressure. And let's not forget, Steve Spagnuolo does. You know, his calling card is bringing pressure. So I'm interested to see him having 2 weeks to prepare for Brock Purdy and the loaded weapons that they have. How it unfolds, but that's my prediction.
Yeah, I think so too. I agree with you. I think the Chiefs will pull it off. And if I'm Brock Purdy, I hold out next year because he needs to get paid more than the quarterbacks at University of Texas right now, which he's making less money than both of those guys. So, but the other thing in the NFL that happens usually this week before the Super Bowl is the coaching carousel. Some hires this week, the Washington Washington Commanders. Okay, I'm sorry, Jeffrey. Coach Terry, shout out to Coach Terry, a 49ers fan and a stout supporter of Native American culture. The Commanders picked up Dan Quinn. Big loss for the Cowboys or big gain for the Redskins?
Well, that depends, because I saw some rumors about Mike Vrabel probably coming to the Cowboys and bringing along Derrick Henry. So maybe they won't feel the loss as much, but he's an excellent coordinator. I will say his Achilles heel is anybody in the Shanahan tree. You know, they know exactly who this guy is when they work with him in Atlanta, and they know how to attack him. So, you know, I mean, it's a big loss for Dallas for sure, but I'm excited for him. You know, sucks for Eric Bieniemy, I guess. I don't know. You know, what's transpiring interview after interview, but apparently he's not the man for that job. And I was thinking that was probably going to be the case, but you know, I'm not an insider. So,
bit of a head scratcher, how he's never really been able to find, either a head coaching or a significant offensive coordinator job after the job he did in Kansas City. Another head scratcher with the coaching carousel is, Bill Belichick is still sitting on the couch at home.
Yeah, that's definitely a huge head scratcher. You know, a lot of people refer to this man as the GOAT of coaching. And obviously reputation precedes him. You know, he's done a lot to earn that moniker. But, you know, I mean, ever since Tom Brady left, right? That, you know, we talk about, you know, who's more at I guess, the cause of success. Is it Bill Belichick or Tom Brady, you know? I think it was a combination of both, but obviously having a big time quarterback really helps your cause. It's definitely a head scratcher. I think one of the defensive players from the Ravens had an interesting tweet about him. I guess that discussion is settled of him not being the GOAT. Mm-hmm. You know, he hasn't gotten a job out of the 8 jobs that were available. You know, and that's, I'm just paraphrasing, but Marlon Humphrey, but. Yeah, like that's something that was said you know, it is a head scratcher, but you know, maybe he's asking for too much. I know that's something that Bill Parcells is type of if you're asking me to, you know, to complete the recipe, at least let me shop for the ingredients.
Right. And I think it's a combination of things. I mean, he's 72 years old. That's one thing. He hasn't won without Tom Brady. That's the next thing. And then if he wants total control, well, I mean, the Patriots have drafted like crap for as long as I can remember. And over the last few years, that really bad. I mean, to the point that the team, won 4 games this year, I think. So I think all those things put together, you know, I mean, the teams are always looking for the shiny new toy, you know, and believe that they say, you know, you want the look right for a coach, you know, and he just may be past his prime. I mean, I don't know why people aren't giving him a chance, but I think it's a kind of a culmination of all those things. Really surprising Atlanta at the last minute, Coach Morris hired in Atlanta.
Raheem Morris.
Raheem Morris. Yeah.
previously was tied with the organization from 2016 to 2020. Was one of Kyle Shanahan's lead assistant when Shanahan was the offensive coordinator in that Super Bowl run, and obviously has been more of a defensive presence, defensive coordinator type. It is probably a testament to his time there in Atlanta of just the respect that he's garnered from the front office to the ownership and such. So, you know, kudos to him.
Yeah, no, it's going to be an interesting season with some new coaches. Dan Quinn's not a bad coach. I mean, he made a Super Bowl. He had winning seasons. A lot of people moving around and really excited about Harbaugh and with the Chargers. That's going to be, to me, I think that's the biggest hire of the offseason. And then the next one will be who the Cowboys pick a defensive coordinator. But I know Ron Rivera has interviewed. There's been talk of Zimmerman maybe coming back. And I would love for Vrabel and Henry to show up with a star next to them. That would be great. And hopefully get us over the hump. Speaking of Belichick and old coaches, let's talk about how Pop is doing with the old Spurs. You see, I'm representing today. Thoughts on the Spurs and where's it going besides worse right now? All right. So, we were talking about Bill Belichick, and maybe one of the reasons that he hasn't found a job is because of his age. And as we talk Spurs, which we didn't get a chance to get into last week, they have what I think is a transcendent generational player in Wembanyama. My concern is that if we don't get it together by his fourth year, he's going to go play with the New York Knicks. You can suck with the Knicks and make a lot more money than you can suck with the Spurs, but it is part of it. Or at least I think part of it is that Coach Popovich is just, sometimes as a 45-year-old man, it's hard to relate to kids. If I didn't have a teenage son and some other kids, relating to some of the things that they talk about and the way they act and the way they do things, to me, the biggest problem facing the Spurs right now is that Greg Popovich has become the grandfather, right? There's a lot of things that we used to get away with when we were kids, I take that back, that we didn't get away with, right? Now our grandkids show up at our mom's house and they can get on the couch, they can eat in the living room, they can use the towels that are there for decoration, and they don't get in trouble, right? And I think that's where we're at with Greg, with Coach Pop, is that these are his grandkids and not necessarily his sons anymore. Is it still in him? I'm not sure. Or is it just the way this generation needs to be coached? I'm not sure. But when the whole team is the youngest in the NBA, under 25, almost all of them, you can't MF a guy when he's coming off from the bench. I mean, like he used to do with Daryl Green, Danny Green, my boy, lost train of thought there. Danny Green used to get MF'd all the time. Right.
Yeah.
Get off the court, shut your effing mouth. Those are things that he can't do with these kids, I don't think. When he used to walk out on the floor and tell everybody to get the hell off, that doesn't happen anymore. And those were guys, Hall of Famers, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili. I don't see that happening anymore. And I think that's maybe part of the reason is that we're kind of in this, is that maybe the generational thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to be quite honest with you. Like
You checked out.
I have. It's not appointment television for me anymore. Yeah, I wanted to give Coach Pop and just the organization the benefit of the doubt. Obviously it's tough to transition from a great like Tim Duncan, and the supporting cast that he had, other greats like Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker, and it's really tough to lose somebody like Kawhi Leonard into the debacle that happened, transpired and such. So, but I haven't really paid attention, and not to say that I'm a bandwagon person and I'm a fan of another team, let's just call it what it is. The NBA is a bad product right now. And more so than anything is anybody can score a bucket, Greg Popovich used to hang his hat on being an excellent defensive presence. And, you know, I went to my first game in quite a long time this past week. You know,
they got 147, I think they gave up that night.
Shout out to Zachary Tanner, one of my players, and his mom, his family. You know, they got some tickets for the basketball team. We were able to partake in a team outing, and we got to see the Orlando Magic versus the San Antonio Spurs here in San Antonio. And you know, Orlando can just get to the bucket at will, you know, and every team throughout the league can just give us a bucket anytime. You know, now I get it. You know, one of the arguments was, you know, I saw Don Harris posted a tweet like, Orlando has, you know, 6 or 7 top 10 picks. You know, I get it. But none of them are the equivalent of Victor Wembanyama.
All right, right.
They're not. You know, 5 guys play on the floor, you know, and when you have the best dude, you should be having the edge competitively. And so when we're not in tune defensively, honestly, coach, like, I was on my phone. I left in the early fourth quarter. I'm not the only one. There are so many San Antonio fans that were on their phone, treated it more like, I'm just happy to be here. But we're just not competitive, man. And I do have a certain way I feel about Coach Popovich, right? Like, he's a revolutionary. Like we regard him as the GOAT, much like Bill Belichick. And it's crazy how it's synonymous, like how their demise has kind of been synchronized a little bit, right? Like, and so I know that he's a person with tremendous values, right? A person that builds relationships throughout the league. You know, I get all of that, right? Like, you know, he did phenomenal things for San Antonio. But when you are in charge of a multi-million dollar organization that pretty much is the bottom line to a multi-billion dollar organization with the NBA, like, we're looking at production here, right? And he's gotten the opportunity. We extended him the opportunity to, you know, call his shot and leave when he wants to leave. But at what price? Because I've tuned out. I know a lot of folks in San Antonio have tuned out. Now, we are going to reminisce on the times that, you know, when San Antonio was the all-time winningest franchise and we had a better part of 2 decades of just excellence and dominance, right? But that's all I'm hanging on to, right? I have nothing to cheer about, you know, other than we do have good young men that reach out into the community and do some good things. I get that. You know, that's important, obviously. But we don't, you know, we're going to lose Victor Wembanyama if we don't fix and right the ship. Because at the end of the day, we got to win basketball games.
No, I agree. And it is painful to watch. And it's even more painful that you have to buy the, I mean, if you don't have the Bally Sports on your cable package, then you're having to pay $20 a month just to watch Spurs games and to watch them get their ass kicked every time. It's really difficult. It's really difficult. And right now I think you have Victor Wembanyama and then maybe Vassell. I don't know. Keldon Johnson is an okay backup, probably the rest of anywhere else in the rest of the league. But the trade deadline is coming up. I think they're going to stay packed. I don't think they're going to make any changes. We get a top 3 pick next year, which I think will help. But they got to start bringing in some veterans. They got to start figuring out, you know, I don't know if it might have been in that Orlando Magic game where they lost by 1 point. And Wembanyama's open in the, underneath the basket, wide open. The play was designed to go to him. And instead, Vassell took the shot, which, you know, apparently, I mean, I think it was Don Harris also. Shout out to Don Harris. Also said that he thinks that Vassell thinks that Wembanyama's his Robin instead of Wembanyama being Batman. And you're his Robin, which if he doesn't figure that out, he's going to be playing in another uniform. I mean, honestly, like this roster is not working. I mean, let's be realistic. There's, you know, the whole experiment with Sochan, I mean, Pop screwed that up. I mean, let's be realistic. Like, I don't think you put your power forward at point guard and then hope that it just works out. I mean, you know, and I mean, even before the season, he was like playoffs or bust. I really think Pop said thought that he had a team here but it hasn't worked out that way. And I would hope that they make some type of wholesale changes at the trade deadline, regardless of what it is, just because it'll at least give me some hope that they're doing the right thing. But I don't see the Spurs organization has never been a big trade team as far as, you know, trying to bring somebody in legitimately, unless it's like an expiring contract. But we have like Devontae Graham, which is essentially, I mean, he's a point guard, right? Doesn't play. DNP every week, every game, DNP, doesn't play, right? Zach Collins, you know, why do we have him? Like, I don't understand. Like, so he can come in and play 8 minutes a game, you know, and score 2 points and one rebound? No, like, these are all assets that other teams would be willing to trade for. And if we don't, if like you said, if we don't get it fixed, if we don't get it fixed soon, like I said, when Wembanyama goes to L.A. or New York and gets his contracts and big deals, and, you know, I think Pop deserves a statue. I think they need to make him a statue and announce his retirement and then bring on somebody else. And I'd like to see Steve Kerr come back and do some things, you know. Ime Udoka. I mean, there's all kinds of Spurs connections out there, coaching wise, that I think on Popovich's tree that I think he would be willing to hand the reins over. But we'll have to see. It, like you said, he's in the status to where they're not going to fire him. He's going to have to walk away, and he's earned that, obviously. But at some point, something's got to give, right? Something's got to give, because you're right. This is not good to watch. I went to a Spurs game earlier in the year, and the same thing. I think we actually walked out into the lobby to watch the Cowboys play in the third quarter, because it was bad. But anyway, I'll still love my Spurs. I'll still support them. But
I will say that I know a lot of what I say kind of seems like hate, you know, especially on Coach Popovich, you know. I will tell you, like, I look at a situation like New York, the Knicks, highly competitive, right? Their best player is a little lefty. Shoot, the name escapes me, but he's playing phenomenal, right?
Also a bunch of first-round draft picks there, too. Yeah.
And so I don't think that Jalen Brunson is better than Victor Wembanyama.
No.
But they're making a shake. You know, and they've got talent, obviously, but that falls back on the leadership. Why don't we have a better roster? Are we tanking? If we are, I know you can't say it up front, right? But just know that you are losing a fan base, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a little bit jaded now. Like, I don't enjoy why it's not appointment television. And like, I'm going to go back to say the NBA product is not a great product right now.
No.
You know, it really isn't. So I'm not making an appointment television to even watch another basketball game, right? Things like, you know, like resting your players, you know, for the sake of rest, you know, when back in the day, Michael Jordan would have 82 games played on several seasons. You know, and was widely considered the GOAT of basketball in general as a consensus. So, by the way, I have another hot take on that. I don't think he's a GOAT, but okay.
Save that one for the next podcast.
I think somebody else deserves a statue, and it shouldn't be Greg Popovich. I think it's, you know what I'm talking about. But Tim Duncan. I'll go on that tangent next week if you want to hear that, but yeah, it's just we got to fix it. I'm not, you know, super excited about where we're at, you know, and you know, we'll see.
Someone's at my front door.
Maybe it's because they're this is already on the radio waves, and they're hearing our
They're trying to get in here and see what we're doing.
The status of the Spurs. But yeah, guys, I appreciate you guys listening. You know, obviously, again, I don't want to declare myself a Spurs hater. I do love the Spurs. I'm super thrilled about the success we had in the previous decades, you know, and I just want, you know, we got generational talent. You know, we hit the lottery 3 times. You know, not a lot of teams can talk about that having that distinction. And so we just got to get it right, man. Let's get me back enthusiastic. You know, right. Talk about earlier bringing the juice. I want to bring the juice at Spurs games, but you're making it hard to bring the juice.
Let really me just hard. Say that. Really hard. Yeah. Definitely really hard. But yeah, like I said, Wembanyama gives us some hope, but they got to fix it. They got to fix it. It's difficult to watch right now. And I feel like you said, they're taking us for granted. They'll tank and we'll still be fans. And so, because they say there's nothing else in San Antonio to cheer for, but so hopefully they get that fixed. Well, I went and checked on the front door there. That was my damn cats. Who loves their Ring camera, right? I mean, you got to have it now. But
yeah, well, I want to tell you something right meow that that we didn't mention when we were talking about the head coaching carousel and what I was most excited about. Now, I agree, you know, Jim Harbaugh going to the Chargers is super dope, man. I mean, he's a winner and he's going to inherit Justin Herbert and, you know, a potentially potent offensive attack. You know, I do like his odds of turning that around. But what I'm really most excited about is Dave Canales.
No, that's right. We forgot to mention Dave Canales is the coaching carousel. God dang, man.
Carolina Panthers, you know, got a guy, Dave Canales, that has a great track record of turning quarterbacks around, right? Most notably, Baker Mayfield. I think he had an outstanding season. I honestly hope Minnesota makes a run at him if we don't re-sign Kirk Cousins. I think he has enough moxie, enough grit, and enough arm strength to really thrive there. Canales also had a hand in turning around Geno Smith and his resurgence when he was one of the I think he was a quarterbacks coach there with Pete Carroll. I know he's from the Pete Carroll tree at the Seahawks. But the most excitement that I really want to project is the fact that we have a strong Hispanic Mexican American backgrounded person at the helm of one of the story, not I would say story franchise, but it's a franchise, you know, right there in the Bible Belt that had some success. I really feel like this guy is carrying a lot of weight for us, you know, people that look like us, Hispanics and such. I'm really thrilled about that right there. Gerard Mayo, you know, got hired for the Patriots and he talked about, you know, things like if we don't talk about race, then we're just going to ignore it. Right. And I know that there's kind of a little bit of a stigma talking about it, but man, you don't realize how overwhelmingly excited I am about having a Mexican American at the helm with an opportunity to break down barriers and open doors like, you know, other coaches have, but it's not many, not with the Hispanic background. And so I'm really excited for that for sure.
No, I think, you know, the shout out to Canales and, you know, we forgot to mention him before on the coaching carousel, but it's a very impactful California born and raised. His parents, I think, were both from Mexico just a great hire. I think not just because he's a minority, but because he's a good coach, you know, and it has come up a lot on Sports Talk and Sports Radio. Why are we talking about race? Why are we talking about race? Well, you know, the league is 80%+, you know, African American, and the top coaches and GMs are not representative of that. And sometimes, you know, it's kind of a touchy subject. Some people like to touch on it. Some people don't like to deal with it. But to me, that's the way the league is heading as far as coaching is concerned is, you know, it's almost like that Deion Sanders effect, right? I mean, you know, he gets to, you know, a historically black college, then he goes to Colorado and you're getting the best recruits in the country where nobody was wanting to go to Colorado before that. And the only thing you can attest that to is because he can relate to the kids. He's a good role model. And, you know, in the same thing with Canales and Mayo and Anthony Pierce, who I think we forgot to touch on that one too, is for the Antonio Raiders. Pierce. Antonio Pierce, sorry.
Yeah.
Antonio Pierce. And the thing about the NFL is that it's been for such a long time, you know, the brother, you know, the old guard league, you know, and, you know, it's probably hard for these guys that are multi-billionaires, which is what you need now to be a owner, you know, to then be able to say, okay, you know, but honestly, I think when it comes down to it, I think the owners and the GMs, they picked who they think is the best guy for the job, regardless of race. And I think that there's just more and more candidates, I think, now being put to that forefront, because I think maybe now they are, you know, the things that they've incentivized for teams to be able to put minority coaches in assistant positions, you know, former players, you know, things like that, that have been now getting the opportunity 10, 15 years down the road to be head coaches, kind of a thing. And I hope it's a trend that continues, because I think it's beneficial for young men to have good role models and someone that they see themselves in. And, you know, so definitely I think it's a huge hire in Carolina.
Well, first off, let me say this. If it wasn't a big deal to have representation, then why did I mention that the Texas High School Coaches Association was extremely ecstatic about the 18% of where we're at with women coaches?
With women, yeah.
And so, and I know that this organization has put steps to increase minority candidates into Texas high school positions of leadership, right? And ultimately, you know, it's reflecting at the people that make decisions, right? A lot of times, you know, there's not enough African-American, enough women, enough Hispanics at that leadership level, administrative, whether it's HR, whether it's superintendency, you know. And so that right there can kind of, you know, be put in a microscope for what affects us, you know, you and I in the high school realm. But I looked at you sideways because it was pretty peculiar that now we have a more, I guess, diverse representation at the head coaching level in the NFL when they started incentivizing teams with third round draft picks. Because at the end of the day, it's a bottom line. So I applaud them for that, taking those measures.
And third round picks are nothing to laugh at. I mean,
look, you get dudes from, I mean, we just talked about Mr. Irrelevant was the last pick in the NFL draft. Now, let's kind of stream that a little bit closer to the third round, which is, I believe, the incentive that every team receives if an organization is able to pluck a diverse representation of your staff, right? That following team will be rewarded with the third round.
With an incentive. Yeah.
So that's pretty, that's why I say I look at it as pretty peculiar that it took that.
Because they have to be incentivized to even give these people an opportunity. And
it affects the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you're getting extra talent coming from. You just increase your talent pool, you know? So whatever it is, I'm happy for these guys. I just know how thrilled I am about Dave Canales and his opportunity that came about. You know, it's a big deal for me because it makes me feel a sense of pride. It makes me feel like, man, if I really put my mind to it, I can get there. Right. That's what the representation of is pretty much theorized in, is that, you know, when you see somebody that looks like you in a position of leadership, then, man, maybe I can get there. You know what I'm saying? And that's where it comes down. That's what it comes down to. So I'm definitely ecstatic about that. And I just wanted to give Mr. Canales a shout out and go do your thing, boy. As long as it ain't, you know, successful against the Minnesota Vikings, you know, I'm going to be a fan of yours, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We'll definitely be following the Carolina Panthers this year and looking for his success. So I think that pretty much wraps up our episode 2 of the Action Podcast. Coming at you in my man cave in Texas, and Coach Salazar coming in through from San Antonio, and appreciate you joining us, guys. I hopefully you'll like and subscribe and share, I think is what the young guys told me to say, is that you got to say that at your video. Look for us on YouTube, Martin Alvarez on YouTube, and then also our podcast, the Action Sports Podcast, on Spotify, Apple Music, or iTunes, I guess, or is it Apple Podcasts now? I'm not real sure which one it is, and other platforms. So again, great time, Coach Salazar. Appreciate you coming on. And then next week we'll have a recap of the Super Bowl. And I think there's a lot of people have been reaching out for guest appearances. And I'd love to, I know you had, you said some guys had reached out to you also. So we'll start getting some guests on and maybe switching up the segments a little bit. And then again, let us know what you think. Give us some feedback. And it's the only way we can make it better. And again, the Action Podcast. Thanks for joining.
Hey, thank you for joining us, guys.
All about that action, baby.
Yes, sir.